And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen is back, making all kinds of noise in there. We hear you, and we are going to listen to our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Economic events. Anyway, it is Thursday, October 6th. 2022. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, hello, Melody. It's good to be back, and happy National German American Day.
Oh, okay.
How about that? Yeah,
on October. I've got a little
German in me. Yeah, I've got a lot in me. October 6th each year celebrates German heritage that over 7 million Americans claim. Commemorates the 13 German. I know, Mennonite families from Krefeld who landed in Philadelphia on October 6th, 1683. Those families established the first German settlement in the original 13 colonies and named it Germantown, which remains a thriving working class community in northeast Philadelphia to this day.
Right.
Yeah, how about that?
Okay. And they buy gold.
What's
I bet
that?
They do. I bet they buy gold.
I would hope so.
I hope so, too. And not a bad day in gold. It was down a couple bucks, but after the strong couple days we've had, you know, I'll take it. $1,715. Silver turned around. It was negative, turned positive, $20.71. Platinum was up $4 at $931. Palladium was up 14 at $2,352. The USDX today, it's just amazing. 1.01. And to see that little pressure on gold is amazing. 112.21 for the dollar in the on the index. Crude oil, 1.26, 89.02. Paper markets today, the stocks fell for a second day. I guess everybody is waiting for the jobs report come tomorrow. And like that's really going to make a difference. The Dow was down 346 points at 29,926. The S&P is down 38 at 3744. NASDAQ down 75, 11,073. Asia, Nikkei was stronger. The other two that I follow were down, the Shanghai and the Hang Seng. Europe was negative across the board, just minimally, you know, just barely, nothing over 1%. 10-year yield, let's take a peek at that. Oh, 3.82, moving on up, getting closer to that 4% level. And natural gas today was down 6.909 as the other two, both Brent and WTI, was stronger. So there's that in a nutshell. And I guess, Dave, there was an announcement, although not too many people paying much attention to it out there, where the and this is what they admit to, $31 trillion for the national debt. And this came out the other day. And so it has surpassed the $31 trillion, edging a little bit closer to the current and always flowing statutory ceiling of $31.4 trillion. Let's see. I think we're getting some feed through coming in. I don't know, but I don't know if your volume's too high, Dave, or
I don't hear anything.
Okay.
It's as quiet as it could be on my end.
Is that right? Oh, wow. And so the Federal Reserve, we know, has already raised the rate several times this year, and It goes on, Dave.
Well, the Congressional Budget Office earlier this year warned in its 30-year outlook that if unaddressed, the debt will soon spiral upward to new highs that could ultimately imperil the economy. Now, the problem with the CBO warnings, as much as I like the institution, of course, I worked there for several years back in the 80s, is that its main audience, which of course are members of Congress, who continue to pass budgets and appropriation bills with huge annual deficits, see projections like this as a way to put off the difficult political decisions for literally decades. They have for many times, with few minor exceptions, and I suspect they always will until there's some fundamental changes in the way we allow them to campaign and how we vote and how they get elected and who gets elected, Melody. In its August mid-session review, the White House's Office of Management and Budget, OMB, forecast that this year's budget deficit will decline by $1.7 trillion. They're calling that the single largest decline in the federal deficit in American history. But two things about that. All the record pandemic spending is, well, most of it is gone, and it's substantially lower than it was just last year. So that's one big reason. In any event, Maya McGinnis, who runs the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, nonpartisan group in D.C., says this is a new record that no one should be proud of. In the past 18 months, she says, we've witnessed inflation rise to a 40-year high, interest rates climbing in part to combat this inflation, and several budget busting pieces of legislation and executive action. She added, we are addicted to debt. Amen. Now, Sungwon Son, an economics professor at Loyola Marymount University, says it took 200 years to pile up its first $1 trillion in national debt. And since the pandemic, we've been adding at the rate of $1 trillion every single quarter. He says, bottom line, when you increase government spending and money supply, you will pay the price later. Thing is, Melody, when our grandchildren and future generations do pay that price, today's so-called leaders will be long gone.
That is very true. And you know, it's funny. It took, what, the pandemic and a trillion every quarter to wake up people? Like, okay, well, let's figure out how many quarters that was. And, oh, that only took us to $20 trillion. So, you know, but nobody cared about the first $20 trillion, did they? I mean, they're just absurd. They're all a joke. You know, now they're all feigning concern that, oh, yes, now our grandchildren and our future generations are going to be well, you should have thought about it when it was at $3 trillion and did something and have done something about it instead of waiting now. You know, it really is. It should make people very angry what they've done. And all of these folks who are saying the difficulty of our future is, what are they going to do about it? Nothing. It's just going to get worse, and that's so get used to it. And now we have the OPEC, which is really kind of a joke, because we know that they're coming out, they're cutting $2 billion so today. OPEC plus yesterday, take that oil out of production, and trying to bring the price of crude higher. It's what amazes me, Dave, is, you know, we have it right here in this country. What? Why don't we go back to what we were doing just a couple of years ago? It worked. And now it isn't. And it just is. And the petrodollar, it doesn't seem to bother. But they all got a hold over the U.S. anymore, I believe. And, but you know, it is funny because the administration says they're going to go to Congress on additional tools and authorities to reduce OPEC's control over energy prices. Well, that's going to work real well, won't it? What do you think OPEC's going to do? You going to mess with us? Uh-uh. There's no way we're going to mess with OPEC when they can control the oil that we need. And do you really think that, you know, maybe it's a backyard play? Maybe they want them to raise the oil prices or so our gasoline prices go higher and higher so that we turn to electric vehicles. Is that it? Don't know. But so I don't know. It's a dangerous game they're playing when we could be helping ourselves right here in our own backyards, but the administration refuses to do so. Jobless claims continue as we see the Federal Reserve continue to raise rates. They're trying to target the job market in order to, you know, slow down this inflation. We saw jobless claims for the week ending October 1st rising by 29,000 or 15% over the previous week. The Labor Department had come out this morning. Tomorrow is the big report, the jobs report. So, you know, we'll have eyes on that tomorrow. And it will jar the markets one way or another. It just depends on if they're going to lie about it or if they're going to come out and report the truth. I think ADP showed 200,000+ jobs being created. But I think anybody who listens to this program, we kind of laugh at that. But then again, and they're never even close. Rarely are they even close to the government's number when it comes to the jobs report once a month. So we'll have to see about that. But it does seem the markets are cooling off. The job market is cooling off. And on Tuesday, we saw the government reported the number of job openings that plummeted in August compared with July. You know, as we continue to see businesses grow less desperate for workers. So anyway, that's a trend that some economists say could put a dent in a chronically high inflation without throwing the economy in a deep recession. Who are these economists? You know, they need to go back to school and figure out that that's not going to help this recession that we're in or that people think is coming our way. Dave, are you there now?
No, I've been here. I'm not sure what happened. The Fed funds rate currently in that range of 3 to 3.25%. Just 6 months ago, that rate was virtually near zero to 0.25%. And these rate hikes have already pushed mortgage rates up to 15, the 20-year highs, and have made other borrowing a lot costlier, particularly if you buy things on credit cards. And you know, the Fed's hoping that these higher interest rates are going to slow borrowing and consumer and business spending and push inflation down closer to its traditional 2% target.
That ain't going to happen.
I say good luck with that. Fed officials are increasingly warning that the unemployment rate will likely have to rise as part of their fight against rising prices. Why they couch it with terms like likely and might are beyond me. If the headline rate remains at or near its current 3.7%, most economists believe it would likely mean more rate hikes from the Fed later this year and particularly next. Thing is, Melody, as we know, the more accurate unemployment number as measured by the government's U6 rate, is hovering around 7%. If that starts to decline on a consistent basis, well, then maybe the Fed could start giving each other, well, low fives, if not high fives. On the other hand, if it fails too much, I'm telling you, we're going to be digging ourselves out of a serious recession sometime early next year.
Yeah, and again, they're between a rock and a hard place. There isn't anything that anyone can do to change the path that we're on because they've used all their well, that's great English.
They used You were falling to their level, Melody. You thought Fed speak in the back of your mind, and you just couldn't help it.
They used all the tools they had over the how many recessions that we've had. They've created, and there's just nothing they can create anymore. And I think they can forestall it, but they're certainly not going to turn this around. And so it's just going to get more and more difficult for everyone, and especially, and people see this around the world. People don't buy into the Wall Street's rah-rah or the Federal Reserve rah-rah or the administration's rah-rah that things are great. The rest of the world knows the truth of what's happening over here in the United States. They see us as a divided nation. They see us as a weak government. They see us all the financially bankrupt. So they do whatever they have to do knowing, and they see China. And so they're playing their games. And, you know, and there's folks out there who say, well, just let them try. Well, you know what? Now we have North Korea. They flew 12 warplanes near its border with South Korea today. That prompted the South to scramble 30 military aircraft in response. They've already flew, North Korea fired 2 ballistic missiles into the sea in its 6th round of missile tests in less than 2 weeks. Japan is going crazy. They're running scared too. So, I mean, it's like, you know, the North Korean planes were probably dozens of miles away from the border. Well, that's not very close. I mean, that's not very far.
That means it's a 2-minute high-speed flight.
If that long. Yeah. It's probably seconds. So what's North Korea doing flexing their muscles and saying, nobody's going to stop me? Who? And that's, it's, there's no one standing up to him, especially not from here. So we're heading into break, so we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living, working, working for a living, working for a living, living and working. I'm taking what they're giving, 'cause I'm working for a living.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy.
they used to. Now it's more. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are alive. Mercy, mercy, mercy,
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog. And I just want to fill in, premiums on product are just skyrocketing, just literally skyrocketing. And now we're beginning to get all kinds of delays, especially on the silver. They're all 2 and 3 weeks out for the silver. And the premiums are just rising. 90% silver, it's only a week out. Even your silver bars, they're 2 weeks out. So no faster delivery there. Gold premiums on gold, American Gold Eagles, I'm just shocked. They're up almost 4% in wholesale in the past, 2 weeks? That's huge. 4% in wholesale for Eagles and Buffaloes. Canadian Maple Leafs are all of a sudden, they're 2 weeks out, and they're up 1% from a week ago. I was selling Canadian Maple Leafs because they were actually less expensive than a Krugerrand. Get that. That was a brief period of time that they were, and I sold a lot of them. That's probably why the premium went up, and now they're 2 weeks out. Krugerrands, they're live and still the most cost-effective to buy. And the Gold Philharmonics, the 2022s, they're not bad. And so even platinum American Eagles aren't a bad buy at this point in time. So if you're looking to convert those paper dollars, give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, you know, we were talking about North Korea and the boldness that they've recently acquired. And would you like to comment anything on that, Dave?
Not in particular. I mean, I just find it just real curious what their Kim Jong-un's true motive is. I mean, again, with a lot of sanctions having been already been placed on North Korea, you know, I'm not quite sure what else effective we can do, since they're virtually shut off from most of the world anyway. But boy, the flyovers of Japan, and now you know, the proximity to the South Korean border, that's real provocative stuff. And you know, it looks as though our primary, or at least only perhaps overt response, is these new joint drills, military drills with South Korea, U.S. and Japan. Not sure what that shows, other than, you know, possibly practicing for a potential real thing. So it's curious, and particularly now if they follow through the North, that is, with another underground nuclear bomb explosion, that's going to certainly raise the volatility level another notch and then some. I mean, they've already conducted a record number of missile tests this year. And if their motive is to be recognized as a nuclear state, I have a feeling, just from what you hear from the diplomats, that ain't going to happen anytime soon, at least recognition by the U.S. or NATO. Not sure how important that is in the long run anyway. Certainly more important for North Korea, but he's got to be dreaming. He's got to be on some serious drugs if he thinks there's going to be that kind of recognition, Melody.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, you know, when I don't know when any administration, sanctions don't work. You know, it really doesn't work. When have they ever worked? You know, it buys time, maybe, but they don't really work. And if they really worked, they wouldn't have to keep adding more and more to the various countries. Oh, well, you know, we're going to add some sanctions. Okay, well, go ahead. Oh, well, we're going to add more. It doesn't work. And they know it, but we just keep doing it, and I don't know who it really benefits. So it's, and again, it doesn't accomplish anything. So I guess there's a little bit, you know, we talk about job losses and maybe, you know, we're heading into the holiday season and we've talked about places that aren't going to be hiring or not hiring as many. And I don't know how many Amazon usually hires.
Last year it was the same as they're talking about this year.
So they hired the same 150,000 employees to help with the upcoming holiday rush. But unfortunately, they're closing or they're not building how many new places, warehouses that they were going to do. So in comparison to what they were going to be hiring, this is, again, just through the holiday, and hopefully these people do get a chance to stay on. But so, again, it sounds like a great thing, and it is a great thing for the 150,000 people that can get hired, but put it into perspective. And, it doesn't seem to really be turning things around. And, but they did increase their wages to $19 an hour. And, but I'm sure that's still not going to offset the amount of inflation that we have in this nation, Dave.
Well, then you look at the other end of the job spectrum. You have Peloton. Yeah. High-tech bicycle company. They just announced that they're going to trim several hundred jobs as it tries to reorganize its faltering business, which is stalled as the earlier pandemic surge continues to fade. It says it plans to cut about 500 jobs, or 12% of its workforce. Peloton says it's completed the vast majority of a restructuring plan that it started back in February, which included a new CEO and a smaller store base that Melody alluded to. Peloton's been attempting to adjust its business as a whole to the current market after experiencing incredible sales growth during the height of the pandemic, especially as more and more people left the office and we're working from home. So see what happens. You got to take the good with the bad.
And UK pensions, we talk about the retirement accounts here, the pensions here. Trillions and trillions of dollars have been lost in them. We know so many of them are underfunded. And we know the insurance that they have would never, ever cover the amount that they're underfunded by. And here we have the Bank of England told lawmakers that a number of pension funds were just hours from collapse before they intervened in their bond market last week. And you got to know that all these pension accounts, retirement accounts, what, a third of those accounts are in bonds. Here too, I'm talking about here. But in England, the central bank's financial policy committee stepped in after a massive sell-off of UK government bonds. They're known as gilts. Following the new government's fiscal policy announcement on September 23rd. So this emergency measure included a two-week purchase program for bonds with longer maturities and the delay of the bank's planned gilt sales, parts of its unwinding of the pandemic stimulus. Blame it on something. Well, plunge, pardon?
No, I was just going to say that's certainly Freudian. Guilt.
Yes, guilt, yeah. I know. The plunge in bond values caused panic, and UK's $1.7 trillion in liability-driven funds, they're called the LDI. So, and again, theirs counts for two-thirds. Long-dated gilts account for around the two-thirds of the LDI holdings. So, I don't know. How different are we, Dave?
Well, ours are funded differently here. I mean, more to the point, there are just so many particularly municipal local government pension plans. I mean, they're close to 50 different state pension plans, but it's really in the municipal plans that... it's so hard for standardization when you have literally thousands of local government plans. Now, most here have begun moving away from the defined benefit plan to the, you know, so-called defined contribution plan, like 401ks or IRAs, but there's still a lot of people receiving defined benefit pensions, and still a lot more others that are grandfathered and will soon be receiving them when they hit their retirement age. So this thing in, and you know, the point I forgot to make was that because there's so many different plans, the asset allocation of these plans varies widely. It is closer to a 40%, or it had been close to a 40% allocation to bonds and 60% stock, real estate, and others. I would be surprised. I haven't looked at that today, but I would bet that it's, aside from the UK, I would guess here in the US that that's gotten a little closer to 50% now, given what's been going on in the stock market.
Well, you know, it's...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to go on about the new cars.
Go for it.
Yeah. A monthly payment of $1,000. That's what people are now paying for a monthly loan payment on a car. And again, this is due to the rising interest rates. And of course, you know, no one's coming down on the prices of automobiles. Over 14% of consumers who finance a new vehicle in the third quarter committed to payments at or above that amount, $1,000 or above. And that's up 8.3% during the same time period in 2021. For of course, this is different for buyers of electric vehicles, how few there are. Shares 26, hybrids 24. But most people are buying gasoline engines for vehicles. The interest rate on new car loans has reached 5.7%, up from 4.3% a year ago. The average price for a new car in the third quarter was just shy of $46,000. Now, this was all according to J.D. Power and the LMC Automotive. So are the prices going to trend a little bit lower, maybe, with these rates continuing to go higher? But the $46,000, that was just, 10.3% higher than the same period in 2021, Dave?
Yeah, and we're also reading that sales incentives from the dealers are diminishing. In fact, some characterizing them as minimal. September, the average discount was just $936. It's down almost 50% from a year ago. J.D. Power's Thomas King says that the lack of inventory as well as strong demand continues to allow manufacturers to maintain a low level of discounting. They say also ongoing inventory shortages are partly to blame for these elevated prices.
Mm. Two decades, 20 years. What a commitment. I'm sorry. Micron, the memory chip maker, they're going to commit up to $100 billion over the next two decades to build a computer chip factory in upstate New York. This is what the company said. The U.S. government has invested in semiconductors through the Chips and Science Act of 2022, which provides grants. That's money they don't have to pay back for companies to build computer chip factories here. You know, Dave, it just get the government out of providing grants. If they want to give them a loan, let them pay it back. They get enough incentives, subsidies from taxes when they go into these localities from the state, you know, and this is going to be in upstate New York. Well, that'll help provide jobs for all the immigrants that are going into New York now. That'll provide them jobs here in the next 20 years. But it's got this chip factory complex is going to be built about 15 miles north of Syracuse. It's going to be close to the border in Canada. So maybe some of those Canadians will be crossing the border to go to work. Micron said it would invest $20 billion by the end of this decade. I would think $20 billion for Micron is peanuts. So what year is this? 2022? By the end of this decade, they have all that time to invest $20 billion into this company. That was the commitment they'd had to make to get the grants from the government, probably. So, you know, if it creates jobs in the next 20 years, that's a good thing. But I don't know, Dave. I'm just not very optimistic that, you know, what they say today will be followed through, you know, in 20 years or more.
Yeah, it's all looking beyond the next election cycle for now. The proof has got to be in the pudding, and of course we're not going to know that for many years. Let's not hold our breaths and stay after your elected officials to make sure this thing happens, ladies and gentlemen.
And what's going to happen right now is music, I hear, so we're heading into the break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
No, 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 no.
Okay, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody dealing with other business. This final segment, you can reach her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, contrary to what the music just said, I will try not to bring you down this final segment, but here's one that, well, you just might not be able to help it. Princeton University isn't free, to be sure, but some are saying it could be. They say the university is so rich it could operate for the foreseeable future with no outside financial support whatsoever. That includes tuition. A handful of ultra-rich universities increasingly resemble hedge funds with a nonprofit educational arm attached. Princeton's endowment delivered an astonishing 47% investment return last year. I mean, something that Warren Buffett, George Soros, or Ray Dalio would certainly be proud of. But the level of inequality in the world of higher education would make even the Federal Reserve or robber baron blush. While a few world-class universities sit on 11-figure endowments, the vast majority of public and private colleges have no meaningful rainy day fund whatsoever. The claim about Princeton was laid out by Malcolm Gladwell, author of The Tipping Point, in his newsletter, OMG. He called the New Jersey Ivy League school the world's first perpetual motion machine. Harvard economics professor John Campbell called Gladwell's argument, quote, appalling. He says Gladwell assumes people give money to Princeton and similar universities to pay for current operations. But Campbell says they make donations to expand the operations of the university. But Princeton is so rich that even if donations and tuition fell to zero tomorrow, it could still continue indefinitely just by spending the income on its near $38 billion endowment, which comes out to $4.5 mil per student. School's entire operating expense last year was $1.86 billion, which is less than 5% of the value of its endowment. Now, that endowment will almost certainly decline this year, at least from the 47%. I mean, such are the markets. But over the long run, it's reasonable to expect the endowment to continue to grow more quickly than the university's expenses. Princeton's historical investment returns have been significantly higher than the rate of inflation in tuition and other education costs. And that explains why proceeds from the endowment account for an ever greater share of spending every year. And on top of that, Princeton continues to be very good at persuading its alumni to continue to donate generously. Now, in response to an inquiry, Princeton noted that operating expenses don't include hundreds of millions of dollars in capital expenditures that the endowment provides every year to fund things like, you know, upgraded or new buildings and facilities and research equipment and the like. But come on, Princeton, you got to do better. Cut that tuition or increase your financial aid even beyond where it is today. Now, when the monthly job numbers are released tomorrow morning, what counts as good can vary depending on where things stand in the economy. That's especially true at this, well, crazy moment, really. As we wait for September jobs data, it's worth asking what a dream jobs report would even look like. You know, the kind of numbers that would give the Fed comfort that inflation is coming down, but not suggest that masses of people will soon be out of work again. As we mentioned earlier to program, forecasters expect tomorrow's numbers due out at 8:30 Eastern time to show a deceleration in job creation, 250,000 positions added last month, down from a little over 20% from 315,000 in August. Other labor market indicators this week have suggested the labor market is starting to cool a little, as Melody mentioned, while remaining basically healthy, with weekly jobless claims up and job openings down. In the ideal scenario for jobs, the number of people in the labor force rises, boosting the supply side of the economy, even if that means a rise in unemployment, as not all of those would-be workers can find jobs. Combined with the recent drop in job openings, Economics 101 says that that would be a sign the labor market was coming into better balance, with the number of people looking for work and the number of jobs available in better alignment. Economist Diane Swank at KPMG says the most benign Goldilocks scenario for a Fed now looking for a cooler bowl of porridge is for the unemployment rate to rise purely on a sharp increase in participation in the labor force. So tomorrow's report will also include data on average hourly earnings. That's an important signal of whether wage pressure is continuing or abating. Analysts there expect a 0.3% rise, which would translate into a 5.1% rise over the past year. Certainly, you know, significantly better than recent CPI numbers, but still more than double the Fed's 2% goal. In the dream scenario, again, one where there's disinflation but no recession, that would come down to that would come down a couple of ticks, perhaps to 0.1%, according to former PIMCO chief economist Paul McCulley. He also sees the net job creation in the coming months in the 200,000 range, a significant drop from the 378,000 average over the last 3 months. Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, the numbers always matter, but this month they matter most for what they indicate about the likelihood of a soft, hard landing. Oh, now let's see. Bear with me one moment and let's see where we're going to go from here. Our weekly American Survival newsletter hit the streets the other day. I have an article that asks, is the Fed pushing the housing market into recession? Pending home sales drop for the third straight month in August and the seventh drop total this year. It's another sign that the Fed's campaign to rein in the effects of high inflation appear to be sending a critical industry into recession. According to the National Association of Realtors, anyway, 3 out of 4 major regions across the country experienced month-over-month decreases in sales. The West was the one to see a minor gain. All 4 regions saw double-digit declines. The NAR's pending home sales index, that's a forward-looking indicator of home sales based on contract signings, fell 2% to 88.4 in August. Year-over-year, pending transactions dwindled by 24%. An index of 100 is equal to the average level of contract activity during 2001, the base year, first year. Now, this index is a leading indicator for the housing sector based on pending sales of existing homes. A sale is pending when a contract's been signed, but the transaction has not been closed. That usually happens within 2 months of signing. Pending contracts are considered good early indicators of upcoming sales closing, why they're watched so closely. Now, variations in the length of that process from pending contract to closed sale are caused by things like difficulties with buyers getting a mortgage, home inspection issues, or appraisals. The index is based on a sample that covers about 40% of multiple listing service data every month. And developing the model for the index over 20 years ago, it was shown that the level of monthly sales contract activity matches the level of closed existing home sales in the following 2 months. Coincidentally, the volume of existing home sales in 2001 fell in the range of 5 to 5.5 million, which is considered normal for the nation's current population. Now, the realtor's chief economist, Larry Yun, observed the direction of mortgage rates upward or downward is the prime mover for home buying, and decade-high rates have deeply cut into contract signings. If mortgage rates moderate, he added, and the economy continues adding jobs, then home buying should also stabilize. But alas, I think that's wishful thinking for now. Even Yun expects the economy to remain lethargic for the rest of this year, with mortgage rates heading to a little over 7% in the coming months. Those rates vary somewhat depending on who's reporting, but CNET reports that the average rate across the U.S. as of today is 6.85%. That was as of the other day. Yun warned only when inflation calms down will we see mortgage rates begin to steady. Now, because of rising interest rates and slower economic activity, NAR expects existing home sales to fall 15% this year, just shy of 5.2 million units, while they project new home sales to fall by over 20%. Yun notes that limited housing inventory and almost non-existent distressed property sales have supported home prices. Overall, he forecasts that prices will rise by almost 10% this year. Yun foresees slower price appreciation and corresponding increases in sales next year as the year progresses. He added, quote, next year, the annual median home price will rise by only 1.2%, but home sales will pick up in the second half of the year, but will be down by 7.1% overall. So should sellers head west? I mean, the Northeast index decreased 3.4% in August, 76.6, down 19% from a year ago. The Midwest index fell over 5% to 88.4. That's a 21% drop. The South PHSI slid a little less than 1% to 105.4. in August, still good, but a decline of 24% from a year ago. On the other hand, the West Index rose by 1.4%, but only to 71. That's down 31% from August a year ago. Yun reported that home prices are the least affordable in the West, and consequently, that region suffered deeper annual declines in contract signings when compared to other areas of the country. Now, are these high prices putting the dream out of reach, the American dream, that is? Well, as Melody and I have been discussing on this program, rising mortgage rates have already put high home prices out of reach for a lot of people, especially first-time and primarily younger buyers. Emily Peck at Axios points out the minimum income needed to afford a typical house has doubled since before the pandemic in 2020 in several major metro areas. That's according to Zillow data. Zillow's analysis shows that the challenge is biggest in Tampa, Florida, where it now takes over $72,000 in household earnings to spend 30% of monthly income on the typical mortgage payment. In 2020, right before the pandemic began, it only took $32,400. That's an astounding increase of almost $40,000, 123% in just 2 years' time. Austin, Texas came in second, Jacksonville, Florida, third. Rounding out the top 10 are Raleigh, North Carolina, Miami, Charlotte, Nashville, Orlando, and Atlanta and Phoenix tied for 10th. The U.S. as a whole, numbers are 65,700 in 2022 versus roughly 35,000 in 2020, an increase of about 88%. Peck says prices for houses are honestly bananas compared to where they were just a couple of years ago. Now, all in all, the Fed's QT has begun to have several early impacts, some intended, others not so much so. But give them time, ladies and gentlemen. Overreach is their MO, and it's clearly within their grasp again. Okay, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow, I believe, with Butch. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes sometime tomorrow morning. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. See you next week. Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.